welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, July 23rd, 2018. The White House says it doubts South Sudan's leaders can bring genuine peace to the country. What does South Sudan say?
We need a language that is supporting this kind of commitment. And I think this is what the U.S. Should be doing, urging us to really continue doing what we are doing here to bring the peace.
And South Sudanese women want a guarantee they'll have positions of power in the next government.
The immediate vice president after Machar should be a female from Equatoria, because we need to balance the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States is condemning South Sudan's move to extend the government's mandate by another 3 years and is demanding that South Sudan's leaders show sincerity as they negotiate a peace agreement. In a White House statement released by the Office of Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday, the U.S. called on South Sudanese leaders to commit to inclusive negotiations, saying that a narrow agreement will only sow the seeds of another cycle of conflict. The statement says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have not shown the leadership required to end the conflict, and that the U.S., quote, would not be a guarantor, a funder, or an advocate for additional U.N. resources to support the transitional government if the leaders do not show a commitment to peace, good governance, and financial accountability, end quote. The White House warns that additional sanctions are on the table for anyone engaged in corrupt activity, and for those who threaten the country's peace. The South Sudan government is criticizing the White House statement, expressing doubt about genuine peace being achieved by South Sudan's leaders. The spokesperson in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry says it is the kind of statement that should never be directed to a U.S. ally like South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Maiwen McCall describes the statement released by White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders as unhelpful and calls the language harsh and diplomatic and intended to punish the Kiir administration.
We need a language that is supporting this kind of commitment, and I think this is what the U.S. Should be doing, urging us to really continue doing what we are doing here to bring the peace. This is what it's all about. But it will not derail us from our commitment.
The statement by Sanders warns that a narrow peace agreement reached by the country's elites, something that could be signed this week in Khartoum, could fuel another cycle of violence. Sanders also says both Kiir and Machar have failed to demonstrate the kind of leadership required to bring genuine peace and accountable governance to South Sudan. McCall strongly denies that accusation, insisting that the South Sudan government is committed to ending the conflict with the rebels during the ongoing talks in Khartoum.
They have to come in with details here about the lack of commitment that they are talking about, because in the end, we are seeing those men are sitting together, greeting themselves together, laughing together, and demonstrating that they can work together. So what else can you say about this kind of commitment?
McCall says the Kiir administration is aware of the current suffering inflicted on its citizens by the conflict and will work with the rebels and other opposition groups to restore peace and stability. He adds that the White House statement tarnishes the image of the South Sudan government.
It shows the world that people are not committed, the government is not committed. When you are committed to doing something and somebody comes and says that if you don't do it, then you will face this and that, that doesn't help on the diplomatic arena.
Last week, the U.S. pushed for and received a U.N. Security Council arms embargo on South Sudan with the minimum number of votes required. Juba condemned the resolution authorizing the embargo. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudanese women taking part in the talks in Sudan say they want the third most powerful position in a transitional government. Negotiators are still discussing a power-sharing deal. Amer Deng, who represents the South Sudanese women at the talks, says the immediate position after first vice president should be allocated to a woman. But Sudanese mediators say the proposed South Sudan power-sharing formula already gives women more than 30% of government positions in the executive and legislative branches. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
The warring parties have pledged to give 35% of the government positions to women as part of the affirmative action. Amer Deng says women welcome that power-sharing proposal, but she says IGAD mediators must include specific positions for women in a future transitional government, and one of them should be the third most powerful positions in the executive branch.
The immediate vice president after Machar should be a female from Equatoria, because we need to balance the country. If we have a president which is coming from the Greater Barkazal, we have the first vice president which is coming from Greater Upper Nile, then we have the third person, which is a female, to come from Greater Equatoria.
Deng insists the 35% government positions allocated for women as part of the affirmative action should be reflected in all levels of the government, from the presidency on down to the local levels, and that those positions be clearly stipulated in any final agreement.
In the top leadership, you have a position of president, position of first vice president, which are already automatically male. And you have the four vice president, which one of them is specified as a female, already there is a gap. We need that gap to be sealed from now. Because if the gap is started from the above, that gap will actually tamper with the implementation of the peace agreement.
The most recent proposal presented to the South Sudanese parties at the talks specifies that one of the four vice presidents should be a woman from the former political detainees group. Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dirdiri Muhammad Ahmed says the draft proposal is very clear about the position of women in the transitional government. He says if South Sudanese women want to have more positions in all levels of the government, they should pressure the warring parties to allocate them more positions.
When we said one of the five positions in the presidency shall be a woman, of course, we did not say this is the maximum, this is the minimum, and we have specified it. But it's now your role to ask SUA and to ask TUGNO, you know, to appoint also women in the position. We have already guaranteed for you a woman in the FD's position.
In SOA, Ahmed is referring to the South Sudanese Opposition Alliance, while TIGONU stands for Transitional Government of the National Unity. The Sudanese foreign minister says, in addition to naming a woman to one of the four vice president's positions, mediators are also proposing a woman be appointed to a top leadership position in parliament.
The three positions in the national legislature, that is the deputy, the speaker and the two deputies, one of them at least we have specified, one of them to be a woman, and hopefully one of the other two also could be a woman. Why not?
Changwoth Bichok, the deputy spokesperson for the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says his group supports appointing a woman to a top government position.
If the government wants to bring a lady, we have no problem with them. If I want to bring a lady, if whoever who is the party want to bring a woman, we have no problem, because that is their percentage and any party can agree to bring a woman or bring a man. So we have no problem with that.
South Sudanese government officials at the talks in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, were not available for comment on this story. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
Several angry young people beat two UN staff members, burnt offices of the World Food Program, and destroyed vehicles belonging to UNHCR, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and other international aid agencies in the Upper Nile area today. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, issued a statement condemning the attack on its compound in South Sudan's northwestern town of Bunj in the Upper Nile's Maban County. The angry residents accused most international organizations in Maban of favoring people from certain parts of South Sudan and ignoring the sons and daughters of Maban. Jock Madut Jock is the founder of the Juba-based Sud Institute and has been monitoring the situation in the Upper Nile area.
First of all, the young people who are there have been marginalized from any kind of services since the beginning of the founding of the state of South Sudan in 2011. And so they are left to their devices. And these are desperate people where there has been no investment in any efforts that would employ young people, like agriculture, like animal husbandry, which is the main trade in those areas.
Let's look at this employment issue here, because it looks like it's at the core of the problem in most of these areas, for instance, Maban. One basic, you know, minimum qualification, we look for people's merits, you take them on merits. Is ethnicity now a qualification in South Sudan?
NGO work and UN work is not an employment scheme. It is not a national employment scheme. NGOs come with a particular goal, which is to fill the gaps that the government has left unattended in health services, in educational services, in food security. These are all responsibilities of a state. And the state having failed to live up to these expectations, the NGOs come to try to fill this gap. And in order for them to fill this gap, they need people who are qualified to do the work that they have come to do.
But the thing is, getting a university degree is one thing. Having an experience in that specific field is something else. And some of these NGOs look for people with experience.
You are right. If your only qualification is that you have graduated from a college, but you have never worked before, then that may be a challenge. But then how do people gain capacity? They do so through work. So if you are not investing also in promoting the capacity of South Sudanese by giving them certain low-level jobs to begin with, and then train them on the job so that in the end, South Sudanese will be able to take over some of these positions that our expatriates are occupying, then, of course, the NGO work is a hand-to-mouth kind of operation, and it does not leave behind any capacity.
I've also seen a lot of copies of job advertisements in Juba on newspapers or on websites. And most of these NGOs are quite clear in terms of who they want to fill the jobs. Most of them will say it's for South Sudanese nationals only. So the NGOs are giving an opportunity for South Sudanese to compete.
This is where the debate comes in, where if there is no way to monitor the human resource managers who are doing the hiring and favoring people from their areas, then we will never get to the bottom of this claim that Equatorians have unfairly dominated the NGO world and the UN world. And that is what is partly leading to this xenophobic sentiment.
Yes, Jok Madud Jok, Equatoria is in South Sudan, right?
It is not that this narrative and claims are right. I'm saying this is what is being said by a lot of young people who find themselves excluded based on the fact that they are not from Equatoria. By the same token, that Equatorians have taken these jobs unfairly because of the way the hiring process is done. I'm saying this because that is the basis for these attacks on Equatorians or for these letters that are going around. That is the basis. It's this narrative. So if this narrative should be challenged, I think there is need for involvement at a higher level in the country to ensure that, one, people don't think of themselves as Equatorians and Barghazal and Upper Nile, but simply think of themselves as South Sudanese, because that is, at the end of the day, the basis for you being employed as a national.
That is Jok Madud Jok, founder and director of the Juba-based Sud Institute. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from New York. There are reports of tension inside the UN's Protection of Civilians site, or POC, in Malakal. A group of people inside the POC wrote a letter last week to international aid agencies warning them to stop hiring people who are not from Malakal. The authors of the letter accused aid agencies of favoring and employing South Sudanese who hail from the Equatoria region. Thank you. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Cases of guinea worm are back in South Sudan. Find out where when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does peace mean to you?
Peace, I can describe it in different ways. Peace means absence of instability. There is no war. There is no injustice. When I live in a very conducive place, I have a good shelter, I have freedom to do everything that I think I have to do as a citizen in that particular country.
Peace, well, I think it's when you're at your happiest and you just feel happy, nothing but joy. That's peace to me.
Well, peace is just like everybody should be allowed to stay without harm, harassment, for whatever reason, the economical, political, all these wars, all these religious blackmails, all these people trying to impose their ideology on you, you know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Health officials in South Sudan are reporting new cases of guinea worm after the country had been on the verge of eradicating the disease. Not a single case of guinea worm had been identified in South Sudan for the past 1.5 years. Officials from the Health Ministry and the Carter Center call the new cases a big setback. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
In 2006, South Sudan had more than 20,000 cases of guinea worm. Within the last 10 years, that number dropped to zero. But today, South Sudan National Health Minister Riek Guy Cook told reporters at a news conference in Juba that new cases of guinea worm have surfaced in Western Lake State.
I'm not happy. It's a sad day. Three cases has been reported in Western Lake State. Of course, as you may be all aware, that Western Lake State for the last 3 or 4 years has experienced intercommunal conflict. There have been fighting and displacement of population, and that situation created an environment that impeded our access, especially to the cattle camps.
Earlier this year, President Salva Kiir declared a state of emergency in the Lake State area to help curb a wave of intercommunal violence in local communities. Guy says the state of emergency led to an improvement in the security situation and allowed health officials to deploy surveillance teams to access hard-to-reach sites, which helped detect the new cases of guinea worm. The Carter Center is an international organization founded in 1982 by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, which has worked to eradicate the disease around the world. Sarah Yeriel, the Carter Center's country representative in South Sudan, says the center is disappointed to learn guinea worm is in South Sudan, but is committed to helping the country eliminate the disease.
The Carter Center is, of course, committed to this task and will continue to support the South Sudan Guinea Worm Eradication Program until guinea worm is eradicated from South Sudan.
Guinea worm disease is a parasitic infection caused by a roundworm parasite. The disease is contracted when people consume water from stagnant sources contaminated with guinea worm larvae. Health Ministry officials say there is no treatment for guinea worm, but in a bid to prevent the spread of the disease, officials say they have deployed technical teams to Western Lakes to educate the local population on how to avoid contracting the disease from contaminated water bodies. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says it is working to prevent the spread of guinea worm by ensuring that local communities drink safe water. Mahimbo Modoi is the UNICEF country representative in South Sudan.
We will continue our collaboration with the Ministry of Health, the Carter Center, WHO and other partners to work closely on community surveillance activities, hygiene promotion networks in Rumbek. In addition, UNICEF has dispatched 4,000 life straws, water filtration systems for personal use, 32 life straw units for community water use, and 100 straw for family use.
Earlier this year, Health Minister Cook participated in the World Guinea Worm Meeting in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia, where the Carter Center is based. Cook says at that meeting, South Sudan was given 3 more years to be declared a Guinea worm-free nation if there are no more cases of Guinea worm reported within that period. In an effort to stop the spread of the disease, South Sudan's Health Ministry and the Carter Center have promised a cash award of 50,000 South Sudanese pounds for anyone who reports a new case of the disease. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Meanwhile, there is good news expected this week on Ebola. The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Society says tomorrow will mark 42 days since the last patient with Ebola was identified in the DRC. If that remains the case, the ICRC will declare the end of the outbreak on Wednesday.
If no more cases are found, the Congolese Health Ministry will declare the country Ebola-free this Wednesday. The recent outbreak in the northwestern DRC killed 32 people. Another 21 people were infected but survived. Those numbers are small compared to the 2014 Ebola outbreak in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. That outbreak of the virus affected more than 28,000 people and killed 11,000. Florent Del Pinto is the head of Congo's Ebola response team. He said health workers used the lessons from the 2014 outbreak to contain this one.
In West Africa, around 20% of new contamination were due to unsafe burials. So we have been very active in ensuring that all suspected cases were benefited from safe and dignified burials to limit the risk of contamination. Community engagement is also something that is very important to be able to sensitize the people on what is Ebola, how to prevent from getting Ebola, and what should be done when some signs or symptoms are detected.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has given an experimental vaccine to people who came in contact with those who came down with the virus. The UN agency has so far treated more than 600 people. Del Pinto warns the deadly virus could still re-emerge.
The challenges are important here because, first of all, it's endemic, meaning that Ebola will reappear in the future here in the RC. So one of the current challenges is to get ready for the next one and to try to increase our capacities, increase our readiness to be able to be ready when it comes.
The DRC has seen a total of 9 Ebola outbreaks since the viral disease was first detected in Congo in 1976. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Hundreds of women whose children have been killed or are missing as a result of the separatist war in Cameroon march in the capital Sunday. The women called for a ceasefire between the government and the armed groups demanding independence for Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
In the name of Jesus Christ, let your peace reign this nation. Lord, release the pillar of peace.
These are women who have escaped to Yaoundé from the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, where a war has raged between the military and separatists for the past year. The women are praying and singing for peace to return to the Central African state. Among them is Gladys Are. She says her 24-year-old son has been missing since March after she says the military destroyed his motorcycle to get revenge for the killing of a policeman in the southwestern town of Motengene. She says she came out to add her voice to the protest.
We could not miss this opportunity to come and say enough is enough.
Last November, President Paul Biya declared war on people he called secessionists after armed men attacked and killed 2 policemen in the English-speaking southwestern Cameroon. The government of Cameroon reports that about 200 civilians and more than 100 soldiers and policemen have been killed since then. Ernestine Ba, who fled from the northwestern town of Batibe, says she has lost her husband and 2 children in the war. She says she is taking part in the march to let the government know that when the military burns houses and businesses, youths are radicalized and escape to the bushes where they join armed fighters.
In old times when I was a child, we used to live in peace. We used to share together. We used to talk what is happening. Whatsoever thing, whatsoever devil that is coming in their heart, please let us stop and make peace. If we humble ourselves, God is going to give us our desire. I plead for peace. I plead for love.
In June, rights group Amnesty International accused Cameroon's government of using unnecessary and excessive force that frequently placed civilians in the path of violence. The government said the report was biased and denied using excessive force. The crisis in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions started out as a protest against marginalization by French speakers who constitute a majority in the Central African country. Some French-speaking Cameroonians joined in on Sunday's march. Marie Menanga, a Yaoundé resident who is housing three people displaced by the fighting, says she wants the government to declare a ceasefire and stop what she describes as a senseless war. She says armed separatists should also drop their weapons.
Nous ne voulons plus voir le sang de nos enfants. Nous disons qu'après 9 mois de travail.
She says no woman who is normal and who kept a pregnancy for 9 months and went through labor pains will want to see her child or children killed in a senseless war. She says everyone should drop their weapons and come out of the bushes because the best gift of life is love and peace. The United Nations reports that about 200,000 people have been internally displaced and tens of thousands have fled across to Nigeria for safety since the fighting began. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Barima by Youssou N'Dour and La Supa Etoile.
Thank you.
listening to Yosu Ndor and Lesupa Etwa with the song Barima. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Tell us what you think about our show. You can find us at SouthSudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mune machenyas, mai machejiri, yundal min ngamabo.